helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. How many people told us that everything would change if the Republicans took over Congress? Then we were told that when the Republicans gaveled in the 118th Congress, there would be a drastic set of changes. Well, now the Republican caucus has control of the House of Representatives, and there are some changes being proposed. But in the long run, do you trust your elected employees to make any real change? Yes, first we had the fight over the speakership and the promised change to how things would be done. Then there's some interesting legislation that will probably go nowhere. Now, with the discovery that Biden had classified documents from his days as VP, do we really expect him to be treated the way they treated Donald Trump? And what would a look at things not changing be without looking at COVID-19, the disease that never seems to end? Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. And we're going to take some time looking at things and asking, well, will anything really change? And then, well, maybe to put some perspective on that. I want to close out with the idea that, you know, maybe things aren't as bad as they could be. Now, I want to actually kick off with the fact that SCOTUS has refused to take up the case of Mr. Brunson in an unconstitutional attempt to basically overthrow the not just the presidential election, but the Congress and the Constitution as well. Now, few of my articles has generated so much animus as me pointing out that Mr. Brunson's case was awful. It was full of a lot of vagary. It was a violation. You know, what he asked for was a violation of the Constitution. He wanted the Supreme Court to remove sitting members of Congress and the presidency for something, by the way, that isn't a crime. He claimed that Congress violated their oath of office by not doing something that would have violated their oath of office. It truly was a terrible case. And oh my word, they came out of the woodwork. Well, you know, Mr. Brunson said this. I said, well, that's fine, but the Constitution says something completely different. So I was really kind of, I must admit, at first I was a little confused why the court even decided, even looked at it for certiorari. There's this infamous Rule 11, and all Rule 11 says is, listen, if there's a sufficiently important case, the court doesn't have to wait for the appellate court to take it before it can start deciding whether or not to grant certiorari. People got all excited. Oh, see, it's, you know, they're going to, this, no. And of course, this whole national emergency, it was a national emergency. And I kept asking, why are you wanting to throw out the Constitution simply because it's a quote-unquote national emergency? Haven't the last 3 years of COVID taught us that using a national emergency to throw out the rules doesn't work out well? Well, again, the court has decided, nope, we're not going to take this case. And they didn't even bother saying why. I would have been curious, but you know what? Okay. Now, I doubt this will be the end of it. I can only hope that a fraction of the energy put into trying to convince the American people to get the Supreme Court to throw out the Constitution could be used to actually fix the election problems we have in many of our states. I'm not holding my breath, though. Then, of course, you know, the 118th Congress was seated and the vote began for a new Speaker of the House. Now, the Constitution says we have to have a Speaker of the House. It says nothing about how that speaker is chosen. That's based on the rules of the House of Representatives. They go through a vote, and a speaker has to get a majority of the members of the House. Having only a small majority, the Republicans needed pretty much all of their caucus to vote in order to give a Republican the speakership. Didn't go that way. And oh, the cries and the moans. Oh my God, it's chaos. They went through multiple votes, just the first time in 100 years they've had that. Actually, I think it was a good thing. I don't know if this is correct. Somebody I generally trust on these types of facts said that back in the 1850s, I think, there was actually a Speaker of the House that went to like 133 ballots. It took 2 months to pick a Speaker of the House. Oh my God, it's chaos. It's out of control. But look at what happened. There were several concessions made, several promises made by the Speaker to the people that were holding up his speakership. Now, I know there are people who call them traitors and terrorists. Was Dan Crenshaw called them terrorists for disagreeing with the party. No, these are actually people that are using the powers we gave them to represent us in the House. Now, what were some of these concessions that were purchased by the so-called chaos? Well, the first and probably one of the most interesting is this motion to vacate the chair. There's a Jeffersonian move, as it's generally referred to, that says all it takes is one member to call for a motion to vacate the chair, to remove the Speaker of the House. Now, this is neither new or unique. See, it has been the rules that all it took was one member of the caucus to call for the removal of the chair, a motion to consider removing the chair, until, that is, well, Nancy Pelosi came along. And she got the House rules changed so only a member of the party leadership could bring a motion to vacate the chair. So we're actually returning to a more normal situation where if Speaker McCarthy isn't cutting the mustard, he'll have to stand and prove himself. So that's kind of interesting. They've also, I believe, changing the rules so that it requires a specific vote to increase the debt limit. So you can't tack it on to some must-spend legislation. Also, one of the things they are doing, which is, I think, really good, is the idea is if House members are going to vote separately on spending bills for the different cabinet-level departments, meaning hopefully we get rid of all these omnibus bills. That would be a big improvement. There's also a rule to require a supermajority in order to increase the federal income tax rates. That's not a bad deal as you go. They also want to replace the pay-as-you-go, which has been proven useless, to cut-as-you-go. They basically want to, you know, if you're going to spend more money, you've got to cut somewhere else. Now, that's not to say all the new rules, I think, are constitutionally sound. For example, a new rule will allow for a resolution to establish a select subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government in order to look at the alleged politicization of the FBI, IRS, and other federal agencies. Now, it's not that I think these agencies are doing a great job or that there shouldn't be some sort of investigation, but my fear is such a subcommittee will simply become another kangaroo court that the January 6th committee was, just on the other side. I'd much rather see an investigation into the funding of these agencies and see if maybe funding needs to be cut because of some of the actions that are being done. Maybe even remove certain departments and sections of agencies that have been used for, social media censorship or things like that. Another bill that I think maybe has some, I don't know if it's really got any teeth, but it sounds interesting. It's called the Holman Rule. This rule allows an amendment to spending bills to cut specific programs, to reduce the salaries of federal employees, or even fire specific employees. Now, I find that interesting. If we're going to talk about cutting programs, or reducing salaries, or even firing specific employees, I like that. Anything that brings accountability to these federal bureaucrats would be a wonderful thing. Of course, we've got the 72-hour rule that the House will require 72 hours notice before voting on any new legislation. This will allow not only the members of the House and their staff to read the legislation, but we the people to do so as well so that we can advise our representatives in the House. Now, of course, there were some political paybacks, or there were just political rules, like making sure that there are certain seats reserved for the Freedom Caucus and other groups, and other votes on Republican or conservative we'll say, political priorities. There's also a talk about actually voting on term limits for congressmen. Find that interesting. Where does the House of Representatives have the authority to tell the people who they can and cannot vote for? So that should be interesting. They're also talking about some more border enforcement, getting rid of some of the COVID mandates, and things like that. So there are a lot of promises made in the fight for the speakership. We'll have to see if the people that fought for it will actually hold the leadership accountable for doing it. See, it's a lot easier to talk about this than it is to actually do it. Now, here, let's take for example, shortly after the speaker was chosen, the House gaveled in, the House passed a bill to rescind $70 billion in IRS funding, I believe targeted specifically at the hiring of the 87,000 additional IRS agents. So the House voted for it. Do you really expect the Senate will vote for it? And President Biden has already made known he would veto any such bill that came to his desk. And what's interesting is the number of people I've heard talking about, see, the Republicans aren't serious about balancing the budget because this money would be used to bring in more tax revenue to balance, help, you know, balance the budget. But I find that interesting, especially after learning about the Syracuse University's Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse report. Now, during the fiscal year of 2022, millionaires did have the highest odds of a quote-unquote audit. However, what they got was called, it's a letter audit. In other words, they got a letter in the mail that said, we're going to audit you. And that was pretty much it. The idea of sending a millionaire through a regular audit, well, the odds of that happening are only about 1.1%. Yeah, basically one out of 100 millionaires actually gets audited. Now compare that to the 1.27% of those who are targeted at the lowest income range. In other words, your odds of being audited are pretty close to the same if you're a millionaire or if you're down at the bottom, what we would say now at the poverty level. Now, if you look at it, say, at the rate for everyone else, it's 0.23%. You're telling me that, millionaires get audited, but low-income people get audited more than pretty much everybody else? Why could that be? Well, understand, if you get, I'm curious the actual real audits, not the fake letter audit. So if the real audits for a millionaire is 1.1%, but you see, millionaires, they have this thing called money. And that money is used to pay for lawyers. And they can fight it, and they can really go after everybody else. They can really fight the IRS and find every loophole and every tax deduction and all the justifications. They can afford it. They don't pay more in the audits that often. At least that's my understanding. But they can, because they can afford to fight it. Now you look at pretty much everybody else between the millionaires and the low income earners, the low income wage earners. They have the smallest chance, 0.23%, of being audited. But the low income at 1.2%, again, it's still the odds are unlikely. But why is that interesting? Well, because guess who has the least ability to fight an audit? Yeah, the people with the least money. So if the IRS planned on hiring 87,000 new agents, and who knows what percentage of them would have been actually performing audits, where would most of they be spending most of their time? Yeah, between the millionaires and the poor. That's what the numbers show, if history holds. So maybe it wouldn't have been that much of a financial increase to have all these audits. Because let's face it, yes, the millionaires, if you catch them in a big line in an audit, you can bring in extra revenue. Those at the low end of the wage scale, not so much. Now, there have been some other interesting things coming out of the House since we finally have a speaker, and things I don't know that are going to go very far. But before I do talk about those, I have to take a break. So I want to remind you of a couple things. One is I'm going to ask you to head to constitutionstudy.com. So you can find all the work that I'm doing, articles I'm writing, lots of information up there. By the way, you can support the work that we're doing here. You can sign up for a mailing list, or you can even ask a question. Ask a question, hit the checkbox, and I'll answer it right here on the radio, because I'm pretty sure if you have a question, there are probably dozens, if not hundreds, of other people that have the same question, but maybe they just didn't think they should ask. Now, the other thing I'd like you to check out is Healthy Cells Focus and Recall. So you get to the end of a busy day. You know, I've got interviews I'm doing and things I'm writing and recording, and I have a hard time focusing on what you're trying to get done. Now, a lot of people reach for a cup of coffee or an energy drink. You're dealing with a lot of caffeine, often a lot of sugar, not really that good for you. Well, Healthy Cell has the only supplement designed to boost your short-term focus and your long-term brain power using nothing but vitamins. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order, whether it includes focus and recall or not. Just go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So again, go to HealthyCell.com, put your cart together, try any of the products that from Healthy Cell. They're all wonderful. Maybe you'll try Focus and Recall. Just make sure you use that code OUTLOUD at checkout. Let them know you listen to America Out Loud, and you get 25% off your first order.
Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code out loud. These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. If you joined the Constitution Study, today we're asking the question, is anything really going to change? I guess it's, you know, hope for the best, prepare for the worst. In the first segment, we talked about, mostly about the speakership and some of the concessions that were made and some of the legislation that started coming out. And, well, it's coming out of the House, but do you really expect it to change when it goes to the Senate? I want to look at something else right now, though, and that is our southern border. To say there's a problem at the southern border, well, that's a bit of an understatement. Now, recently, Biden went down to the border. Hey, he's been in the job 2 years. He went down. Okay. And of course, his Secretary of Homeland Security claims that the border is not open. I think the only thing that would have made this a funnier interview, a funner example, is if he made that statement standing at a podium in front of the southern border watching illegal aliens being carted across by coyotes into the United States. I mean, I can't believe Mr. Mayorkas is that stupid. It's obviously a political move, and it's not a surprise. I mean, just look at the slideshow. When Biden went down there, you know, they didn't put him, we'll say, at a checkpoint. They didn't even put him out where they have a lot of illegal alien traffic. No. What are all the pictures of him standing in front of a gigantic wall saying, "Oh, there's no problem with illegal immigrants here." No, you got the wall there, the wall that you refuse to continue building. So there's Biden and Mayorkas and you know, this just laughable positions. I like I said, this is political theater, political showmanship. And Biden promises to toughen the border. He says, "Yeah, we're going to get, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to create a legal path for an additional 30,000 aliens a month. Well, that is if they're Venezuelan. So I guess if you're Venezuelan, you got a better chance. But this is supposed to be getting tough on the border when we've had, what, 3 million illegal border crossings or 3 million apprehensions in the last 2 years. I mean, this here, it's a problem. It is a problem that had gotten better under the previous administration. Still is a problem, but it was getting better. It's been nothing but a disaster since Biden took over and put Mayorkas in charge. Remember all the things about, he said, "Oh, no, we'll put Kamala Harris. She'll be overseeing the border." And not only did she not know what was going on, she never went down to even for a photo op. Now, Texas Representative Pat Fallon has filed articles of impeachment to impeach Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, claiming it's for high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, I did take a quick look at the articles. It's under House Resolution 8, and they want to impeach him for high crimes and misdemeanors. Well, what examples? In other words, what are they actually impeaching him for? Well, they said, in his conduct while Secretary of Homeland Security of the United States, Alejandro Nicolas Mayorkas, in violation of his constitutional oath, engaged in a pattern of conduct that is incompatible with his duties as an officer of the United States as follows. Article 2 of the Constitution tasks the executive branch, which today includes Secretary of Homeland Security, with ensuring the laws passed by Congress and signed into law by the President are faithfully executed. Specifically, the Secure Fence Act of 2006 requires the Secretary of Homeland Security to maintain operational control over the entire international land and maritime borders of the United States. They go on a little bit more details about, you know, what is operational control. Then they go on. Over 5.5 million illegal aliens have crossed our southern border under the leadership of Secretary Mayorkas. There have now been 20 straight months with over 150,000 illegal border crossings, and Mayorkas has presided over a 180% increase in encounters at the southern border compared to the previous administration. And there's some more examples of what has happened under his leadership, but they go on. Secretary Mayorkas has undermined the operational control of our southern border and encouraged illegal immigration by doing the following. Terminating contracts for additional border wall construction in contradiction of congressional appropriations. Ending the migrant protection protocols, also known as Remain in Mexico, which was an indispensable tool to address the border crisis and restore integrity to our immigration system. Attempting to eliminate Title 42 authority. Now, these are interesting, but I don't know if they rise to the level of a high crime or misdemeanor. Well, probably a misdemeanor in its original understanding. But they went on. In his conduct, this is Article 2. In his conduct, while Secretary of Homeland Security of the United States, Alejandro Nicolas Mayorkas, in violation of his constitutional oath, willfully provided perjurious, false, and misleading testimony to Congress. Now, that one is interesting, because that is a crime under oath. If he perjured himself under oath in his testimony to Congress, that would be an impeachable offense. Article 3, in his conduct while Secretary of Homeland Security of the United States, Alejandro Nicolás Moraes knowingly slandered his own hardworking Border Patrol agents and misled the general public as follows. Well, again, I don't know that slander of people who are in his department really qualifies as a high crime or misdemeanor. So of the three articles, I see one really strong possibility for an actual impeachable offense, a high crime or misdemeanor, that is perjury and false and misleading testimony to Congress. And they give several examples. Now, the question is, will this change anything? Now, if this gets passed in the House, which it might if the, you know, if the Republicans don't screw things up, then it would go to the Senate and the Senate would have to have a trial. And, well, let's just say I'm not expecting the Senate to, I don't expect it'd be much of a trial, but I certainly don't expect them to actually convict Secretary Marcus of this impeachment. Why? Well, yes, the Senate had the Democrats, the Senate have a one vote majority, but and you read Article 1, Section 3, it says the Senate shall have sole power to trial impeachments. It goes on to say no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members present. So even if you could get a couple of Democrats that say, yeah, we want to, you know, we want to throw our constituents a bone and we'll vote for to convict him of impeachment, they need two-thirds of the Senate. They need 67 votes. I don't see the 49 Republicans coming up with 67 votes, almost 20 additional votes. Don't see that happening. But does that mean that it's a bad thing that these articles were filed? No. So you don't, if you do things only when you know you're going to win, then you're a weasel. If you do this because it's the right thing, I think there's some fluff in here, right? Because I think the actual articles of impeachment, Article 1 or Article 3 are a little weak on impeachment, but Article 2, the lying, the being convicted, I should say, being impeached for perjury, that's an impeachable offense. And, I mean, that falls under the rate of high crime. You're under oath. So it's the right thing to do, even if you don't get the outcome you want. I guess that's the point I'm trying to stumble across here. I'm glad to see so far one member of the House stand up and say, this man has been so bad, let's do something about it. I wish there were more. I jokingly laugh when people ask me about running for Congress. I mean, just imagine me in Congress. The leadership of both parties would simply try to hide me in a hole, which would be fine. They wouldn't give me any committee assignments. Certainly no leadership positions. No, which would be fine. I'd have all that much more time to write articles of impeachment. So I don't have a problem with the article of impeachment. But unless the American people really start pressuring their representatives and their senators, I don't expect anything to happen. Now, even if we pressured the senators, I doubt we'd get a conviction. But just imagine, you know, the Democrats in the House impeached Trump twice. Not because they actually had evidence of a high crime or a misdemeanor, but because of the image that it made. Okay, let's impeach him. Let the Senate try it, and let's do it out in the public. Let's let the public see what is going on. Now, I want to switch to another subject. You know, one of the things, that there's a psychological process. I believe the term is projection, where you take your own views of your shortcomings and you project them on others. It's not that they're actually there, but you assume that they're there. And well, here's a little bit of projection coming back to bite people in the backside. See, remember when the FBI raided the home of Donald Trump because the Trump and his people were working with the National Archives to return secret documents, classified documents that had been taken and stored, and by the way, under the control of the Secret Service, when the National Archives asked for certain precautions to be taken, they were done. In other words, they were working with them. Well, now we find out that Biden had documents. See, there's a Biden center at the University of Pennsylvania. And he used it as an office, apparently, between his term as vice president and his term as president. And while they were cleaning out that office, they found in a box of unclassified documents, they found classified documents. Does any of this sound familiar to anyone? So, of course, what do? They contacted the White House, and the White House lawyers alerted the National Archives and the Records Administration, and they started looking at all of this and seeing what we could do. Now, it took about half a nanosecond for the corporate media to say, oh, no, this is nothing like Donald Trump. You see, you actually have the Biden administration working with the National Archives once they found out. You mean kind of like the Trump administration did. And of course, you know, it didn't require a raid to get these, but it didn't require a raid. They were being sorted through and turned over beforehand. And of course, there was a lot of speculation with Trump, right? Did he have the nuclear codes? Did he have... No, apparently some of the classified documents that Biden held onto dealt with Ukraine and Iran and others. I find that kind of interesting because, remember, you had that whole Ukrainian Burisma thing with Joe Biden's son. I don't know. Do I think that the fact that the president had had classified documents in private possession, documents that were not supposed to be allowed outside of SCIF, do I think that's an impeachable offense? On its own, my guess is no. You know, you're talking about a records mistake, and there's as yet no evidence that, no evidence that correlates these documents with the abuse of his position as vice president that Biden admitted to in so many words. I mean, he did say that he held up USA to Ukraine unless they fired the prosecutor that was going after the company his son worked for, you know. And then, of course, you have all the evidence from Hunter Biden's laptop about kicking 10% to the big guy. See, there's no as yet evidence that these documents at all relate to the malfeasance that we've already seen. So I don't think these in itself, but again, is anyone surprised that President Biden is being treated different than President Trump was? Would anybody be surprised if President Biden will continue to be treated differently, that this will be handled with kid gloves as opposed to how an almost exact situation happened with President Trump? Do we actually think that they will be treated the same? Oh, of course not. Because I don't expect the corporate media to go all apoplectic that Biden had classified documents in a private office outside of a SCIF. I don't expect them to call for further investigations. I certainly don't expect people to be calling for the FBI to start raiding other Biden locations that might have other documents. I don't expect it because that's not the way our government works. Our government is a bunch of team players. It's not about governing. It's about which team is in charge. And let's face it, the Democrats have more pull in the bureaucratic state than the Republicans do. And let's add that to the fact that, well, Trump was personally hated by so many in government. It shouldn't really be a surprise. I mean, let's face it. Nobody legally went after Hillary Clinton for having illegally using a private email server for national security business, for government business in violation of the Records Act, or for conducting having top secret communications across that private email. Nobody went after her. Nobody talked about impeaching her. Well, a few people did. But there was no articles of impeachment filed. There were no criminal charges filed. In fact, the FBI covered for her. See, we keep thinking that this is the donkeys versus the elephants. No, it truly is the bureaucratic state versus the rest of us. And if you are in a position to support or enhance the bureaucratic state, well, you can get you've got people that will cover your back. Think of the thin blue line, right? law enforcement officers covering for the bad actions of their fellow officers. It's the same thing, only it's happening in government. I don't think it should be stood for, but the only way it changes is if we the people stand up and start demanding different actions. I mean, remember, we just had an election where 96% of the incumbents in Congress were reelected. So we're not, if we keep doing the same thing over and over again, if we keep putting the same people in positions of power to make these representative decisions for us, then we're going to get the same actions. And if we continue this, we're going to continue our slow march towards tyranny and serfdom and destruction. So you see, I'm less concerned about the same old coming out of Washington than I am about the same old coming out of we the American people. Now, I did say I was going to talk a bit about some of the COVID stuff, and I will, but again, I have to take a break first. Now, before I do, though, I'm hoping you realize that the Constitution Study is only one of many voices coming from America Out Loud. So please, go to AmericaOutLoud.com every day to find out the latest news and happenings and information from different points of view. It's more important than ever that we share these stories. We expose people to the articles, the ideas in the podcasts, in the videos to show there are other points of view. There are things we can do to protect our rights, to defend them and assert them. And by doing so, by sharing that information, by showing other people there is a way forward, will you help us as we work to secure the blessings of liberty?
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly, acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products, toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Yes, today we're asked the question, is anything really going to change? Well, now the Republicans are in minor control, barely in control of the House of Representatives. We talked a bit about the speakership. We've talked about legislation that's coming out of there. And I'm not saying that what's happening is bad or that it shouldn't happen. But I want to set expectations that, you know, are we really going to expect things to change that much in the future? As I said at the beginning, if there is a perennial things will never change, it's got to be COVID and so much that went around that happened with it. And again, it wasn't so much COVID as the actions of government, those government actors that use COVID as an excuse, well, to act like the petty little tyrants they are. For example, Tucker Carlson was talking about a 2021 email that's come to light that shows White House officials demanding that Facebook censor him for pointing out the problems with the COVID fake vaccines.
It was never really a secret that there were huge problems with the COVID shots. And we knew this because the Biden administration's own VAERS database indicated that from the beginning, a lot of people were being injured. But the media suppressed that news. We tried to point it out more than a year ago, not because we have a problem with vaccines or anti-vaxxers, but because if you're going to force people to take something, you probably ought to know what it is and what effects it might have. That's the most basic right of all, to know that what goes into your body, to know something about it. But in trying to say that, we were censored, and now we know we were censored directly by the White House. In April of 2021, the White House's Director of Digital Strategy, a character called Rob Flaherty, sent this email to Facebook, quote, "The top post on Facebook about vaccines today is Tucker Carlson saying they don't work," he complained. He then pressured, the White House pressured Facebook to follow its policy of, quote, "reduction," meaning censorship. We're quoting, "If reduction means pumping our most vaccine has an audience with Tucker Carlson saying it doesn't work, then I'm not sure it's reduction." In other words, censor more. The Facebook employee responded by promising that the company was, quote, "running this down now."
Now, Mr. Carlson wasn't alone. Pfizer board member and former U.S. FDA commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb, well, there have been emails released showing that he pressured Twitter to censor posts, including ones that accurately stated post-infection immunity is superior to that bestowed by the COVID-19 Pfizer shots. For example, there was one email that showed an exchange regarding a post from a Dr. Brent Giroir. He also headed the FDA at one point. And he pointed out an Israeli study that showed that natural immunity was far superior to, or at least superior to, the immunity given by the shots. The study went on to say there's no scientific justification to require proof of vaccination if a person had natural immunity. Now, in the email that was released, Gottlieb wrote to a Todd Boyle, who's a Twitter executive, saying, "This is the kind of stuff that's corrosive." Here he draws a sweeping conclusion off a single retrospective study in Israel that hasn't been peer-reviewed, but this tweet will end up going viral and driving news coverage. Except that data was found out to be true. That study was one of many that have been done. And guess what? This very same Pfizer executive, there was another Pfizer executive, I should say, that admitted, you know what? Pfizer never tested to see if this stuff worked or not. So we have that type of censorship. And of course, how many times have people tried to suppress information from VAERS? See, it's interesting. See, the CDC finally released their analysis of the VAERS safety monitoring for COVID vaccines. And guess what they found? Well, among other things, twice as many mRNA COVID-19 vaccine reports were classified as serious compared to all other vaccines given to adults. That the number of serious adverse effects reported in less than 2 years of the mRNA COVID-19 fake vaccines is 5.5 times larger than all reports for vaccines given to adults in the U.S. since 2009. Approximately 73,000 adverse effects were reported for COVID-19, only 13,000 for all other vaccines given to adults. There were more than 96 safety signals for young people ages 12 to 17 and 66 for ages 5 to 11. Yet the FDA still went ahead and recommended, authorized the use of these drugs. Now, here's the thing I'm wondering. Are people going to be held accountable for this? Is Pfizer going to be held accountable? How about the people at the FDA that approve this or that suppress this information? And for everybody who kept believing when, even today, Biden said that vaccines stopped the spread of COVID. But it's an abject failure. All three vaccines are seeing breakthroughs, according to an email discussion among health officials. So people were coerced into taking an experimental treatment that was never properly safety tested. They were denied access to information about the risks of this as required by federal law and medical ethics. When you said that it doesn't stop the infection, you were censored off of media platforms, and now we're finding out, oh, guess what? Yeah, all that data was true. And what about the data about masks being absolutely useless with a respiratory virus? Yet here we are. We have multiple states with school districts that are going to implement mask mandates for students as they return to the classroom. Now think about this for a second. You have COVID-19, which studies show most masks, the paper and cloth masks that people generally wear, don't do diddly squat. Unless you're using an N95 and it's properly fitted, masks do little, if anything. And of course, the isolation has led to a spike in the respiratory syncytial virus, the RSV. And don't forget flu. We're into the flu season. So now we've got schools in Massachusetts, Michigan, and Illinois that want to reinstate mask mandates. Now, we've never had a mask mandate for the flu before. We've never had one for RSV before. But now, see, they've learned, hey, we can throw masks. We can control people through masks. And they're doing it. Even though there is no medical evidence, there is no scientific or medical-based information saying that the mandating the use of masks in general does anything to prevent infection from COVID-19. By the way, that's not just me saying it. Experts from the Israeli Medical Association Journal have published this. This is a letter they published back in December. But doesn't matter. There's no scientific evidence, no medical evidence, but you know what we have? We have evidence of the people bowing down and following these tyrants. And guess what? They're going to do it again. Does it work? No. Did it work before? No. Is there any medical evidence? No. Do you have any legal authority? No. But we got away with it last time, so we're going to do it again. But I want you to consider this. See, sometimes I think we get stuck with a fear that we won't do something because it might not work. Now, sometimes that means we won't try some new food, or we won't try some new business or some new job or some new school because we're afraid it won't work. Sometimes we won't stand up for our rights because we're afraid it won't work. But you see, that's the attitude of defeatists. John Quincy Adams said, "The duty is ours, the results are God's." See, we have a duty to look at what's failed in the past and not do it again. See, the thing about failure is it's the opportunity to try again with something else. But as Einstein said, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome, that's the definition of insanity. So as I look at this and I say, I don't expect things to change much in the next 2 years just because we got a different set of political cowboys in office, that doesn't mean I have to be right. But it won't happen because of something I do, at least not me alone. That'll only happen if we, the American people, start recognizing that our rights are being violated and then start defending them and asserting them. And I hope you'll head to the website constitutionstudy.com to find out how. I'll help you read and study the Constitution. I'll help you teach the rising generation to be free. I'll help you as you not only recognize when your rights are violated, but I'll help you prepare to defend and assert them. But we have to do something. We can't simply sit back and say, oh, well, woe is me. Nothing's going to change. Nothing changes. And I don't expect things to change because I don't expect the American people to change. But hey, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a small group of us here that have seen the disasters of the last 3 years, that have watched COVID run roughshod over, use an excuse to run roughshod over our rights, that have seen the dysfunction that is Washington, D.C. Now, we didn't make a change in the November election, but maybe we'll learn. Maybe there just weren't enough of us. I don't mean we go out and storm Washington. What I do mean is you start working in your counties. Make sure that the 2024 election in your county is free, fair, and transparent. So if you do that in your county and your neighbors do it in their counties, well then the state, the election in your state will be free and fair and transparent. Then there won't be a reason for people to file ridiculous lawsuits because Congress didn't object or didn't investigate allegations that they had no legal authority to investigate. But that only happens if we, the people, actually start standing up and doing something locally. Let's take some of a fraction of the energy that was spent in getting a couple of extra Republicans in the House or in dealing with that ridiculous lawsuit. Let's take a little bit of that energy and let's use it to actually change things at home, right here in your backyard, in your hometown. Maybe that will make a difference. Now, maybe it won't make a difference in Washington, D.C., but you know what will make a difference? It'll make a difference for you, for your family, for your neighbors. Now, I have made a difference here in my county. A small difference. I'm not trying to boast, but I have been involved and I've made a small difference. And I hope we can all work together to make it better, to keep making those differences locally. Because I think that is how we're eventually going to end up either regaining control of this country, or at least if it goes down in flames, if the experiment in self-government fails, at least we can go down saying we did something. We stood up when we were called. We stood against the tyranny. We answered the call. And if America submits to tyranny and serfdom and subjugation, at least we didn't go down without a fight. I know it's the end of the week, and I don't want to leave you on such a morose idea, so I have an article here that I want to share with you. It's actually from the Babylon Bee. I saw this article, and I loved it. You know, 9 surprising benefits of the COVID fake vaccines. Hey, so let's look at some of these. Let's see. What do we got here? Number one, you are now better than everyone else. So you take the vaccine, you're better than everyone just because you took the vaccine. Let's see, wearing a mask is even more fun when vaccinated. Number three, you now have a good excuse not to exercise because your heart might explode. Ooh, there's a good one. Number four, even if no one asks to see your vax card, you know it's there in your wallet, and that is a really special feeling. Number five, your year-round routine of staying locked in your home get spiced up twice a year with booster trips. Number six, you'll be thanked by name during Pfizer's quarterly earnings report. I like that one. Let's see. Number seven, your mRNA has turned into LGBTQNA. Intersectionality, anyone? Number eight, your third arm will help you in charades. And finally, number nine, your death can be sudden instead of long and drawn out. What a relief. I hope you take that in the vein it was meant to be. Sometimes you just have to look at the world and laugh at its foolishness. Maybe sometimes laugh at yourself. Let's face it, things are pretty serious right now. There's a lot going on, and well, just a good silly laugh is probably not a bad idea. Now, I want to remind everyone that I'm going to be at the Reawaken America Tour in Nashville, January 20th and 21st. I think I'm going to have a media booth. I'm still working out the details. I hope to see you there. I'd love to meet you face-to-face. I'd love to shake your hand. No mask required, no proof of vaccination required to come up and say hello. I hope I'll see you there. If not, I hope to see you somewhere else around the country. I'm still looking for events to go to. So if you have an event going on, or you have an event that you think would be, I'd really like to be involved in, please let me know. Head to the website, constitutionstudy.com. You can look at About Paul. You can contact me or just put the ask a question. Just let me know. While you're at it, hey, if you have a question, please ask it. I'm looking to do more question segments here on the radio program, but I need your questions in order to answer them. So again, go to the website, constitutionstudy.com, click the ask a question button, hit that check mark that says answer on the radio. I'll be more than happy to. But if there's one ask I would have, it's that you share the news. Share the news that the Constitution Study's out there, that there's a place where everyday Americans can learn to read and study the Constitution for themselves, that we don't have to live at the whim of those in power, that we can be free citizens if we'll just stand up and live that way. Let people know they can hear the Constitution Study every weekday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can listen on our website through our media players or through our apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Now, if you can't listen live, that's okay. The shows go to podcast typically a day or two after they're heard on the radio. You can find them on your favorite podcast app, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, anywhere you listen to your podcast. But do me a favor, subscribe to the show. If you can, leave me a rating, especially on Apple Podcasts. It helps me climb in the ratings and helps other people find the Constitution Study as well. They can find all the links right there at the homepage at AmericaOutloud.com. But as I said, don't keep them to yourself. If you want to have a better future in America, we need to share this information. It's how we'll find others that are willing to work with us on different causes and opportunities. But it's also how we work together to share not just the information, but to share the blessings of liberty that are the birthright of every American citizen. Born here, immigrated here, all of us who live in this great country, from sea to shining sea.